Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome back to Renee's Heart to Heart. This is Renee. Thanks for coming by this morning. I have a special guest this morning. It's a young man I met a couple weeks ago. He is on a very, I hope, rewarding, I'm sure it is, and very worthwhile journey. His name is Jordan Hunt, and he's on the board of directors for the Homeless Coalition of Palm Beach County. He joined the board in 2010 and served 2 years as vice president and for 2.5 years represented the Coalition of the Homeless Advisory Board for the county commissioners. Jordan has been an advocate for the rights of the homeless in Palm Beach County for several years. Amongst other things, he began and continues to help organize the West Palm Beach chapter of Food, Not Bombs, since March of 2007. The group has given out free meals to the hungry and homeless in downtown West Palm Beach. Jordan believes that well-being for all is not a dream. I agree. And I also believe that the more people that we have, like Jordan and some of his friends and team members, have the right idea. Because, you know, you can't sit back and find fault in everything and do that on a daily basis and never do anything to make it any better. Otherwise, what are you? You're a part of the problem. So I was very pleased to meet this young man. He's very likable, very friendly. And we talk like we've known each other for years when we start talking, because we are... it appears to be that we're very like-minded. So I'm happy to have him on the show today, and I'm looking forward to some of the information he can give us, just in case you know somebody or you're concerned about this problem, you realize that it's an issue. And like he and I talked last night, something's wrong when in our world the homeless shelters you have to be on a waiting list to get into a homeless shelter. What does that say about us? A waiting list to get any kind of help anymore. Sometimes you don't have time to wait. Sometimes it's the difference, maybe even between life and death. So let's bring Shell in so that she can help me welcome Jordan. Good morning, Shell.
Well, good morning, Rainey, and good morning, Jordan.
I haven't brought him in yet. I'm going to bring him in so we can both say hello to him at the same time. But you heard me read his bio, right?
Yes.
Yeah, he's very, very, very interesting young man. And for somebody so young, he's already done an awful lot for all the things that you and I both know. This show has been on the air now for... since January of 2013. So we're well into over a year and a half, and we've talked a lot, especially in the state of Florida, homelessness. We've talked a lot about what homelessness manifests, some of the horrible things that happen out there in the world of homelessness. So I look forward to bringing him in. I'm going to bring him in. Good morning, Jordan. Thank you.
Good morning. How are you, Maureen? Shelly? Good to meet you.
Good.
Good to meet you.
Just, Jordan, call me Renee. People who call me Maureen either don't know me or they're mad at me.
All right, Renee. Will do. Thank you so much for having me on the show today. I appreciate it.
Oh, well, it's our pleasure. I've read your bio, so everybody has an idea about the kind of things you've been involved in, and I'd like to just give you the floor, so to speak, and as you share with us some of the things that are going on out there, I'm sure Shell and I will have questions. So you're on, my dear.
Okay. Well, I will do the best I can to relay, you know, some pertinent information in regards to homelessness in general and here in Palm Beach County. Like the bio said, I have been involved with the Homeless Coalition for a few years and homelessness here in Palm Beach County for several more. And it is an issue that has been very prevalent for a very long time here as well as nationwide, if not worldwide as well. But things are getting better in some ways and they're getting worse in other ways, you know, with the economy and with people still uncertain about employment and income and housing and things like that. More today than maybe ever before, anybody can be susceptible to falling into homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't take a whole lot of things going wrong, you know, whether it's a wrong decision or whether just circumstances have played out in an unfavorable way. Anybody could really wind up homeless and be suffering the life on the streets.
Well, can I make a quick comment on that? Jordan and I talked briefly last night about some of this, and as Shelley and I have both stated on the show, on several occasions this comes up. The truth of the matter is, with minimum wage set at what it is, and income and outgo, it's almost logistically impossible for a young couple, high school graduates, to get an entry-level position and have an apartment. Almost impossible. So with that, if you can make it happen, one thing, I said to him last night, one thing, the car breaks down. You have one car between the two of you. Even if you have two cars between the two of you, which a lot of kids do, then they're done. They're fried. Because once they have to pay $600 to $1,000 to repair the car, there's no savings yet. So that comes out of the bill money. And there they are. They're behind in everything. So it is a big part of what happens to some of the younger people and the older people. Older people, Jordan shared with me, has older parents, and there was illness. And even when you have Medicare, even when you have Humana or some kind of subsidiary to your Medicare help, it's still $40, $60, $100 every time you go to the doctors, every time you go. So a small savings is eradicated really, really quickly. So now that I've given all that great news, I'll let Jordan continue.
Well, you're absolutely right. And that's just like what you're saying, you know, even a responsible individual who is making all the right choices and doing the best they can wind up in debt by, you know, running into car trouble or medical bills or something like that. And there's a quote from one of my favorite movies of all time, which hardly anybody knows about, but it's Danny Glover and Matt Dillon playing two homeless individuals called the Saint of Fort Washington. But there's a conversation that the two of them are having near when they meet, when they're pointing at a, you know, very prominent-looking individual, a young man, like, looking at, you know, at some tables on the street, you know, seeing if he wants to purchase some jewelry or something like that. But he's in really nice, you know, suit and apparel and everything. And Danny Glover points him out and says, you know, look at that guy right there. You know, the check doesn't come in for a couple of months. He could be on the street just like you or me.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's a very real thing. And in my personal experience, there has been a vast difference of people that wind up homeless that I've met. You know, obviously there are some issues with mental health or drug abuse and making some bad decisions that, you know, could wind you up to be homeless. But I've known somebody that grew up on Palm Beach Island in one of the mansions that wound up homeless. I knew a Harvard Law graduate who was a lawyer, and he was a foreign citizen, so he was born on a military base, you know, outside of the country, and so that sort of caused him some issues when he was subject to identity theft, and he ended up losing everything he had. He had no birth certificate, no driver's license, no passport or anything like that, and because of this sort of risk that he was in the system, he couldn't replace any of those documents without having the other documents. And so he was homeless and had literally no choices as to what he could do, you know. He would just do some odd jobs and try to make some cash where he could, you know. But it's very, very tough. And, you know, people don't realize how close they are. And a lot of times people don't talk about their experiences with, you know, if they've wound up on the streets or had to live in their car for a while or whatever it may be. But I guarantee you there are people that you know that have had to deal with homelessness, even if it was for a few days or a few weeks. And really the majority of people that wind up homeless only remain homeless for a few months or a very short period of time, maybe a few days, maybe a few months. And then there are individuals that get stuck being homeless for years, like this lawyer gentleman, and other people that you know, obviously can't pull themselves together, and the help that is out there doesn't really meet the needs that they're going through, and they're incapable of getting the support and the help that they need because there's so many stipulations the way things are set up. There's a limited number of programs with a vastly limited amount of money and budget to help these people, which is a huge, huge issue, which we'll get into more later. But these groups have, you know, mostly, like, you know, various, like, hoops that you have to jump through in order to start getting services, and it's great what they do, but it also leaves a lot of people out of the loop that are incapable of getting the help they would need, you know.
Mm-hmm.
One of the things that we were talking about yesterday is the Homeless Coalition, along with the other homeless service providers in the county, recently had basically a week-long of seminars from this wonderful speaker, Ian Dijon, from Org Code Consulting is the name of the business, but it's basically training us on the SPDAT, which is the Service Prioritization Decision Assistance Tool. It's a really long name and an acronym and whatnot, but basically it's something that we're trying to implement here in the county that could benefit social services and, you know, across the board, but also homelessness specifically. But it's focusing on, like, harm reduction, you know, and meeting people where they're at and what is the quickest thing we can do to help them get to the point where they need to be, you know. And certainly the goal is to get everybody off the street into a permanent housing situation where they're not threatened with homelessness after that, you know, where they can, you know, have regular income, have a job and whatnot, and not have to live on the streets.
Now, when you say regular housing, are you talking private homes or are you talking about you know, living situations that are set up by the county or something like that?
Well, for permanent housing, it's like regular homes, apartments or single-family homes or something like that. It depends on the situation, what's available, what they can afford. And once again, it's affording things. And really, like, with the programs that we've had going on, which have been very, very successful, they still only fill a tiny portion of the giant chasm of the lack of services that people need in this county. And one of the biggest things is back-end housing. You know, we have a homeless resource center, the Senator Philip Lewis Center on 45th Street in West Palm Beach, that opened up a couple of years ago, coming September. And it has been enormously successful, but has really shined a really bright spotlight on the amount of need there is in the homeless community. And we are hoping to build another homeless resource center in West County in the Belleglade area, as well as one in the South County area, if not more beyond that. But there's hardly enough funding to keep the first one going. And it was really just because of the bailout money that we got a few years back that we were able to open up the Lewis Center. But once people go through that center, we've been able to place them. We've placed, you know, I'll get into some of the figures in a minute, but it's finding affordable housing after they've gone through the program is one of the biggest things, and having services available that can help them with first and last month's rent or even, you know, paying for their rent for the first few months until they can get on their feet, you know, is a huge issue. The way the Lewis Center works is it has 60 beds for single individuals, 20 for the women and 40 for men, and it's basically a up to 90-day, you know, program that's trying to transition people, give them what they need in order to get them into permanent housing. It's what we would call a transitional housing program because they're able to stay there while working and transitioning into a permanent housing program or situation. the families that come
during
in,
the transition period, obviously, based on everything you just said, they're getting counseling assistance and direction and finding ways of getting a more permanent situation. So there are people that work within those housing situations that are then helping these people?
Yes, and they have job training programs and, you know, healthcare programs. That's one of the programs that does, you know, require sobriety, which is an issue, which we'll get into, you know, going back into, like, harm reduction and such. If somebody isn't ready, willing, and able to make those changes in their lives, then they just don't get services from a lot of places, you know. Now, at the
right.
center, there's other people that are being served, so it's not like, and we're still giving those individuals help to the extent that we can, but as far as, like, actually being in the program and getting housing and things like that, even though obviously there's only 60 beds, you know, versus the vast, you know, need that's out there. But those individuals can't get into that program until they're able to get help with going through a sobriety situation, you know. But I know people in the streets that, you know, it's not as easy as just saying, hey, why don't you change your entire life and how you live it and how you're able to get by, and then I'll give you some help, you know. It's
right.
kind of reverse, you know. If we give
what
them,
do you think, harm?
Maybe get them off the streets, then it might be easier for them to get the mental health and the addiction help and things like that they would need.
Huh.
What were you asking?
Yeah, you've used the term twice, and I want to make sure I'm understanding. You're saying harm reduction, H-A-R-M.
Yes, as in reducing the amount
which
of
I was
harm
understanding the
that. Harm. Yeah, that the individual is experiencing in any way possible, as well as the community abroad. You know, one of the issues that we'll get into when we get more into, like, the costs and things that we were talking about last night is the amount of money that it obviously, you know, takes and being able to provide those things for those individuals. But the community as a taxpayer pays a lot for homeless services, whether it's directly or indirectly through the healthcare program. And really quickly, I'll go and throw out the statistic that Ian had given us in the SPDAT training that shocked you last night, that shocked me when I first heard it, and I made him repeat himself just to make sure that I understood what he was saying correctly. But the cost for a homeless person to die on the streets in our society is roughly $1 million, an average of $1 million to the taxpayer. From all the times that they would have to go into the hospital and the emergency room and getting medical care up until the point where they die, it has cost the taxpayer roughly $1 million. If we can get those people off the street, even if it's just a temporary shelter, even if it's not even a transitional program, you know, that at least reduces the harm to the taxpayer, as well as the harm to the individual, because they're not having to go into the emergency room as often because they're not susceptible to the elements and
right.
you know, all of the illness and things like that to go with living on the streets, you know. I mean, people get used to having a full night's sleep when they have a bed to sleep in, but if you're living on the streets, you don't get a full night's sleep, you know. You first off, you can't sleep too heavily because somebody might rob you, you know.
And
people might get surprised that you know, the homeless get robbed as much as they do, but they're easy target. And even if they don't have much, even if it's a few cents or whatever they have in their bag, people will take it because they can, you know. And keeping personal possessions is a huge problem and an issue for the homeless because they don't have anywhere to put their stuff, you know.
Let's make one other comment.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Let's make one other comment that I think needs to be thrown into this mix, and that is that there are some situations where this is a choice, that they're comfortable. For whatever reasons, they don't want the bureaucracy, they don't want somebody telling them what to do, and they make do. And they make that choice to be where they are. So you do have that in the mix as well. Not everybody is looking to be...
Well, sort of. And in some ways, that's more or less true. However, I've heard... In all the times that I've been dealing with the homeless and all the homeless people that I've met, I've actually heard of one individual that lives down in Broward near Fort Lauderdale that, you know, really enjoys just the freedom of being able to sleep on the beach if he wants to and just, you know, not being tied to society. But that's the only case of anybody that I've, and I haven't even met that person. That's just hearsay as far as I'm concerned. But the people that I've met, that it's not that they're choosing to be homeless. They may be choosing not to take the options that you have available for them. But if you give them the option without any strings attached to live a healthy life, have a bed to sleep in, and regular food to eat, they would take it, you know. And that's something that, like, has been talked about, and, like, and nobody's actually, since I said I had a problem with it, nobody in any of the meetings that I've been at has used that term again, but there was a term that was being used quite heavily of willfully homeless. And I hate that term because you don't willfully choose to not sleep in a bed because it's more comfortable to sleep on dirt, you know. And maybe there might be a couple of people in the world that is the case, and they like that lifestyle. But it's a huge difference from choosing that over not choosing to take the options that you have. Right. Like a lot of the vets that, you know, are homeless, which is a lot of them, whether it's from recent wars or wars in the past, there are a lot of veterans out on the streets. And there are, and having talked with them, and certainly some changes have been made, certainly in the county with 10-year plan and the Homeless Resource Center and things like that. That's the 10-year plan to end homelessness, which I don't know if I mentioned that before, but that's what has enabled us to get the Homeless Resource Center up and running and optimize, you know, and hopefully further optimize the homeless services in the county. But it's different, you know, like with sobriety. You know, if you're dealing with somebody that, you know, is incapable of making those personal commitments to sobriety, you can't force them into sobriety. You know, it's like legislating morality. You're never going to be successful. You know, you're never going to be able to help a person if they're not able to take the help that you're offering them. And there's so many stipulations to that help. You know, and going back to like the vet, you know, I've had so many conversations with people that it's like they've talked to like the VA and they've tried to go through the system, but there's so many hoops that they have to jump through that often they're incapable of doing that even if they're willing to. And then there's others that feel like they've been abused and abandoned by the system, and they don't trust the system, and they don't want to work with any sort of government agency to try to help end their homelessness because they blame them for their homelessness, you know?
Right.
And so it's tough when you talk about, you know, homelessness being a choice, because I would say never, if maybe just extremely rarely, you know, will you find somebody where homelessness would in and of itself be a true choice. You know, nobody chooses to walk the earth like Cain from Kung Fu willingly most of the time, you know. So it's something that a lot – but I don't – I understand, you know, where you're coming from, because it's a perspective that a lot of people have. And, you know, when you don't deal with homelessness and if you don't talk to homeless people, you know, it's you don't understand. But that's
There's a large percentage of homeless people that really just had some sort of life circumstance throw them into that, and they're sometimes single mother with children, sometimes their whole families, you know, it can be single men and things like that. I've met a couple of homeless people in those situations, and the stories really are heart-wrenching. The problem is that I see, like, whenever I get into conversations with people about homelessness, there's a lot of prejudice against homeless people because, unfortunately, there are people out there that pretend to be homeless. They'll stand out on a street corner with a sign, and then you see at the end of the day they're walking around a corner and they're getting in a car and they're driving away. I've actually had that happen to somebody that I know, and they were, like, infuriated. They had donated to this individual, and then later on that day they find them getting in a car and driving away. It turns out this person panhandled to make money, and they actually weren't homeless, but they would stand on the corner with a sign every day, and actually they had quite a lovely home. You know, so you hear these kind of stories that hit the media, and because people are so uncomfortable about the subject of homelessness, I think people really don't understand why it can happen. So they'll latch on to a story like that, and they'll say, oh, well, it's all a sham. There's no true homelessness in this country. Just because of one story hitting the media like that, and it really sets people off from trying to help these people. One of the things I wanted to ask you about,
You're
I don't
right, yeah.
Palm Beach. You're basically in Palm Beach County. Is that correct, or all of Florida?
Well, the Homeless Coalition is a nationwide, you know, organization. There's the National Coalition in Homelessness, which the film I mentioned with Danny Glover and Matt Dillon, The Saint of Fort Washington, was made in conjunction with and in honor of the person that started the National Coalition in Homelessness up in New York City. And the homeless coalitions throughout the country have spawned from that. But generally speaking, around the country, they are county-based organizations. I don't know if there's examples where that may not be true, but certainly in the local South Florida area and across Florida, it's, you know, each county generally has its own homeless coalition. And
the reason I was asking that, because I used to work out in Margate, which is like an hour drive south from my house. I'm in Palm Beach County, and I work, I guess that's I guess that would be Broward or Dade County.
It was Broward, honey.
What?
It was Broward.
Okay, Broward County. Anyway, once I would get into Broward County on one of the main thoroughfares, which is State Road 7, on street corners there would be homeless people that would have these bright like jackets on, almost like they were directing traffic at an airport. I mean, it was a very, very bright bib. It had lettering on it, and they would have these cans, and you could tell that they were part of some organization, but they, in fact, were homeless themselves, and they would go out. But they were very bold. It offended me because they would walk in and out of traffic, and I felt it was inappropriate, and I didn't understand why some organization was having these people do that. It was very intrusive, and I didn't really understand the basis. Like, is this money going to that individual? Is it going to this organization? So I think fundraising for an organization that will then help homeless people as a whole by creating housing, by creating everything you're talking about is perfect. But I think having organized panhandling is a really bad idea, and I don't understand why Broward is doing it. It's just... Very distasteful, and you don't know where the money is going.
Right, you're absolutely right. I've never heard of organized panhandling like that before, but there has been an issue that was discussed, you know, a couple years back, maybe like 3 or 4 years ago, as far as in the county, regarding like aggressive panhandling, and there are a few signs that were put up, like maybe half a dozen in places that, you know, from your car, you couldn't even read the sign.
Right.
You'd have to literally get out and walk up to it. It was, I don't know if it was the best use of money, but it was trying to say there was a better way to give, as opposed to just giving your money to a panhandler that you don't know where it's going, or even if it is legitimately helping that person find some food or whatever, you're serving one person, you know, versus if you donate your money to, you know, a homeless service provider or an organization like the Homeless Coalition, where it's going to directly benefit, you know, the homeless in the most effective ways, that's a better way to give than to help out the individual that you're not even sure if you're helping them out, you know. But
that
makes
a lot more.
That is an issue. And as far as I'm concerned, it's like I generally don't give out money to panhandlers, you know. Every now and then I might. I will give them food from my car. I will give them water from my car. If I have other things that they might need, I will certainly do that. But back when I was, you know, a little bit more active in the Food Not Bombs food sharing program, I would just save my money and buy rice and beans or pasta and vegetables and things like that and cook it for them, because for the same $5 or $10 you might give one individual that might feed that one person for one meal, you're giving a meal to 50 people, you know. But then that goes into you know, the conversation we had in regards to, like, charity versus helping them stabilize themselves, you know.
Exactly. And that's why I like the idea of
starving
organization, many people.
Yeah. Well, and I only recently started, you know, using the term harm reduction as it was introduced to me, but that's been my entire thing. It's like with the food sharing program, I know I'm not solving these people's problems in any long-term sense, but I am solving an immediate problem of them not having food to eat and giving
hunger.
It to them, you know, as well as you are planting seeds of hope for those individuals that people still care and that there is, you know, a way that they can, you know, better their lives and get out of the situation they're in, you know. But going back to, because I the panhandler stuff, because I really want to sort of comment on what you were talking about, and that, you know, you're really right. You don't know if somebody's a fraud or not. Everybody's heard, you know, of the story that you said, and there's one in time that I highly suspected that that may have been the case. But I would say that the vast majority of people that are out there panhandling are doing so because they don't have any other ideas to where to make the money they need to survive, to pay for their motel room maybe, just to pay for their food. There's people that are living out of their cars, so just because they go back to their car doesn't necessarily mean they have a home and a bed to go sleep in, you know. But you don't know what's going on with those people. You don't know if they are going to use that for drugs or alcohol or you know, junk food as opposed to healthy food, if you're looking at it from like a healthy sort of perspective, which is certainly, you know, part of what we were doing with the Food Not Bombs program, is trying to serve healthy food to people, when often the food that they get that's handed out to them are like, you know, a white bread bologna sandwich with maybe a slice of cheap cheese in it, and that's it, you know. Plus you might get some chips and a cookie or something, you know. So you're, generally speaking, the people that are getting free food at different places, which if you're in that situation, you really have to plan your day out as to when you're going to be where to get the food for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and how you're going to get back to wherever it is that you're staying, whether it's a particular spot behind some bushes that seems safe for now, you know.
Right.
That's a huge issue for a lot of people, is that their entire day is spent traveling from one food sharing program to the next so that they can just eat. And how are those people supposed to get a job and in their homelessness on their own if they are having to spend their entire day just finding their sustenance, you know? So there's a lot of practical issues that a lot of people don't know about or are aware of. But as far as like the panhandlers, you don't know where the money is going. But if you are concerned about it, then, you know, I mean, you could just have some, like, cheap snack bars or something like that you could give out to the person if they need, you know, money. If they're panhandling for money for food, give them something healthy to eat, you know, give them a fruit or a big thing of broccoli.
That, you know, maybe. It's funny you bring that up, Jordan, because that's all I will do. I too, will not hand any money to anybody. But I will go, if I feel moved to do this, I don't do this all the time, but if I feel like something is genuine just by the looks of somebody, I'll drive back around, I'll get something to eat and drop that off to them. But
right.
even during
yeah.
the hurricanes,
right.
you know, in 2005, I'd be en route to work, and there were people on every corner because so many people couldn't go to work because their places of business were destroyed or closed because of no power or things like that. And I'd say, come work with me today. I have a big property. There's, you know, like 30 acres we need to clean up. And they'd come with me once, earn the money for the one day, and then out of four people I brought the first day, I will never forget this, for the rest of the week, only one showed up the rest of the week and
yeah.
worked
mm-hmm.
every single day. So when I say
yeah.
people make a choice, I don't mean that they get to do eeny, meeny, miny, mo, this is what I'm going to do. I mean they make a choice to, like you just said, if they don't want to get clean and sober, if they don't want to give up the drugs, if they don't want to give up the prostitution because it's become their way of life, that's still a choice, Jordan. That's still a choice. And they may argue that point with you. They may say, well, you don't understand. How many times I've heard you don't understand, I can't even count. But it's still
yeah.
a choice. If somebody's offering you their hand to lend some help to you, but they say there are some stipulations, and you make a conscious decision to not want to live by the stipulations, what is that?
Well,
it's a choice.
It's not a choice, though. I would have to respectfully disagree. It's not always a choice.
Okay, tell me how it can't be a choice.
You never really know where people are, what they're going through, whether it's, you know, physically or mentally or emotionally. And you never know what good things you do now that don't seem to pay off now wind up paying off in the long run, you know, and that maybe 6 months or a year from now, that person, because of the help you gave them, might actually make choices that changes their life around, even though you don't see the fruits of your effort, you know. But have you ever dealt with drug addiction, substance abuse?
Yes.
Not just substance abuse, but addiction issues?
Yes.
And are you familiar with the recovery rates for people that go into rehabilitation? I know you've worked with that, you know.
Yeah, they're very low. They're very low.
They're very low. They're very low. Mm-hmm. Dealing with when you're addicted to the substance and trying to get off of that is very difficult, even when you go into rehab. You know, the amount of people that fall back and you know, fall off the wagon or whatever is astronomical compared to the people that actually, you know, make it into sobriety and stay there, you know. And so it's not when you're dealing with an addiction, it is considered an illness, you know, a mental illness, and that they cannot just choose and will themselves out of it, you know, but they may need help to do that. But I also posit that some people aren't in the situation that even if they do want to get sober, they may not be in a place where they can make those choices, you know, successfully. But it doesn't mean that they don't still deserve help. And that's going back into, like, what we had, you know, gotten into with harm reduction, is that if you get somebody a bed to sleep in, get them off the street, and then focus on, you know, how can we help you, you know, get sober or get the job training or the security or the mental health care or the medication or whatever it is you need to survive and make your life what it should be, you know. But one of the things that the gentleman from the SPDAT training, Ian, went into in his harm reduction thing, it was all about the entire half-day session was all about drugs, sex, like sex workers and sex issues and things like that, and mental health. It was those three things. And sometimes they're interconnected, not always necessarily, but, you know, when you're dealing with like, sex workers, you know, whether you morally think that it's right or wrong, giving them condoms, you know, can help reduce the harm that they may have and that they may be, you know, bringing into society. You know, if they're spreading disease to, you know, their johns or whatever, then that's going to have broader effects not only on that person's life, but their family's life and their community's life and things like that, and the cost of health care and things like that, you know. So, like, you know, as far as, like, sex workers, well, let's give them a safe place where they're not going to be raped or beaten, you know, and let's try to reduce the harm. And maybe the goal is to eliminate the harm altogether and to eliminate those behaviors and get them out of prostitution or get them off of drugs. But until such time as we can do that, let's give them the help that they need in order to get to a place where they can actually make effective life changes, you know. And so when it's dealing with, like, drugs, he went into, like, the different, like, drugs, like crack. He was talking about often people, I think I'm getting this right, I don't know, but often people use a light bulb to smoke their crack out of, which is very dangerous. And the light bulb could shatter and the glass could fly back into their throat. So
wow.
As opposed to having that happen, or if you have a crack pipe that is made of metal and is short or whatever, a lot of crackheads not only have burns around their lips, but they're missing their front teeth because the crack pipe is so hot, time after time, they're actually ruining their teeth and their lips and burning themselves and giving them permanent scarring and things like that, and yet they still go back to the crack, okay? Well, maybe we can't get that person to stop smoking crack, but maybe we can give them a safer pipe to use, you know? And maybe we can eliminate the need for them to wind up in the emergency room and cost taxpayers more money because they didn't have a safe way to do what they're going to do anyway. Does that make sense?
Well, for me, it's beautiful, and it shows how young you are, and I am really, I mean, I knew that I liked you the first time I met you, but I'm tainted, honey. I'm tainted. Because I've done all this, I've been there, I've put my hand out, I've been burned, and so consequently, I'm looking at things from a bit of a tainted point of view, and it's refreshing to, you know, to hear you talk about helping somehow, to make things, if not change them, make them better. And I think that's awesome, and I wish there were more people that could go there. A good majority of us that are still involved in thinking that they can make a difference in the world, you know, after so many times of trying, you do get tainted, and I guess that's where I'm at right now. And not that I'm going to stop, because I so enjoy when I feel like I make a difference, because that's that makes Renee feel good. So it's a little bit self-serving, but I like hearing the things that you're saying. I mean, I would have never gone there, Jordan. I would have never gone to buying a better crack pipe for somebody, and yet I applaud that totally.
And it's shocking. I mean, information, like when he was talking about this stuff, it was like most everybody, because they're all like, in, you know, different service providers and people that deal with this sort of stuff, you know. And it was shocking for some of them to hear, but others had been so entrenched in the system and dealt with this stuff so much that it wasn't a shock. It was actually a relief of like, hey, there is something that I can do to help this person out, you know?
Yeah, that's kind of how I feel right now. You're right.
You know, when I was living in New York, I had a best friend of mine. We don't have any, I haven't heard from her in almost 20 years now, but we had been friends for 12 years, and she became addicted to heroin, and she was out on the street because she ran away from her life. So this was sort of willful homelessness, but she was homeless because she was emotionally in trouble. Basically, she had a nervous breakdown.
Yeah.
And here, this was a woman who had, when I first met her, had three different jobs, very high IQ, very intelligent, but she had a problem with drug addiction when she was 16, and when she was in her mid-40s, it reared its ugly head again. And I found her one day, and I asked her to come and stay at my apartment with me to try and help her, and during those few weeks that she lived with me, she was doing drugs, and like you said, I assisted her in doing the drugs in my apartment while I was looking for a rehab center that she went into willingly, by the way. All right, so this was kind of like a carryover to get her to a good place, get her up the street, get her safer, with the ultimate goal of getting her cleaned up, and she did, in fact, willingly go into a rehab center after 3 weeks of living with me. But during that 3 weeks, she was using constantly. And if I had not provided her a safe haven, or if I had told her she couldn't do the drugs while she was with me, she would have gone back out on the street because she wasn't ready. In other words, I didn't have a controlled environment for her. She never could have gone through rehab with me. So I had to allow her to continue her lifestyle until I got her into a better place, and it was almost like a stepping stone. So it's kind of like what you're talking about. Give them better crack pipe so they don't get so sick all the time and injure themselves, with the ultimate goal of maybe getting them to a better place where they will make better decisions going forward.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and on a case manager sort of basis, those sort of initial steps, even if they're not addressing the ultimate problems and getting you to the ultimate goals, so to speak, you know, it is building rapport and a relationship, and they start to trust you. And then maybe a few months down the road, if you've worked with them and helped them in some ways, you know, giving them condoms, giving them a safe crack pipe or whatever it might be, you know, they may be more willing to trust you and allow you to help them more, you know. But it's a personal journey. Everybody has a personal journey, you know.
Okay.
And we may not be able to solve, we're never going to be able to solve everything for everyone, you know. But the more we try, obviously the more we will succeed, you know. And getting things like a safe place to stay, you know, where even if you're doing drugs or whatever it might be, where you're not going to get beaten or raped or murdered, you know, is important from a social perspective, from a financial, you know, cost savings, taxpayer, you know, perspective. You know, it's all wrapped into one. And like what my bio said, you know, I do honestly believe that well-being for all is not just a dream. It's not just a pipe dream that we can't achieve. But if we work on it with specific goals on how to help people where they're at, maybe we can get to a place where everybody has food, medicine, and a bed, you know.
And one of the other things
that
is important to mention when you talk about, because I know you don't like this term, and maybe this is an interesting way of looking at it, but when you talk about willful homelessness, because it does appear to a lot of people that a lot of homeless people are doing it by choice, and I think one of the things that's important to recognize is that it's a very, very complicated subject when you're talking about homelessness,
because you do have people that have drug addictions or alcohol problems, all right? And what a lot of people don't understand is that addictive behavior is genetic. The vast majority of people who are either alcoholics or drug addicts have a genetic defect in their brain that the rest of people don't have. So it's very hard to judge them because you don't have that propensity. They've actually proven this scientifically now that there is a genetic defect called the A1 dopamine receptor, A1 allele dopamine receptor, and that people that become alcoholics or drug addicts have this, and people that don't become addicts don't have this particular genetic code in their brain. So it's very hard to judge somebody on behavior that you don't know if you would do the same thing. The other thing is when you're talking about when you're talking about people that are on the street, you know, committing sex acts to make money, or this is how, a lot of them are runaways. A lot of them are getting out of a situation that was abusive, and this is the only way they know how to survive. And I kind of compare that to a battered woman. How many stories have you read about a woman who was beaten for years by her husband or her boyfriend and never left the situation, chose not to leave the situation?
Yeah.
Well, her decision was based on fear and the unknown. They would rather stay in a situation that's familiar, hazardous but familiar, than to move into something that might be safer but that was unknown because they feared it might get worse for them. So a lot of choices to remain homeless are based on fear and the unknown of not knowing if their situation really can improve. That's why I'm saying it's complicated, and it's really hard to sit back and judge people, for those decisions.
Yes, you're absolutely right. It is incredibly complicated, and everybody's, situation is different. But you make a very good point with genetics. You know, some people have a predisposition towards certain things, whether it's mental illness or substance abuse or whatever it might be. And you can kind of get into the broader philosophical arguments between like postmodernism versus existentialism, and are you really making choices when you think you're making a choice, But there's this great quote from another movie, but this gentleman asks the main character, what is the greatest or what is the most common human characteristic, fear or laziness? So quite often, fear is our greatest motivator, whether it's fear to achieve because we're afraid of what will happen if we don't do it, or fear to do something that we're, too afraid to do because we might fail, or what might happen if we do succeed,
Right.
I had a great friend in high school who was in chorus with me, who was gay, and he was a big man. He was a very obese guy. Did drag shows and had a beautiful voice and things like that. And a few years later, I kind of lost touch with him, but I got back in touch with him at some point. And he was in like an abusive relationship in some other state. And it was this guy that was literally just beating him up like every day. And I'm like, Lewis, you're a big guy. How are you going to let somebody beat you up? You could beat anybody up. And he's like, well, it's not a physical thing. It's more of an emotional thing, And when women leave, run away from home because it's a bad situation there, maybe they're getting beaten or whatever it might be, and they wind up with a pimp that ends up beating them as well. It's the same thing over and over again. People fall into these habits, and maybe they're predisposed towards them, or maybe they're just used to them. You never know. But one thing go for it.
I was just going to say there's lots of articles out there that actually talk about the abuse, the bad treatment, all that stuff, having a certain comfort zone for some people. There's a lot of people think that's where they're supposed to be. And, I like being the devil's advocate here because these are the things that I hear from a lot of other people, This is good to have these conversations because you actually teach people what may be really going on for somebody at face value, like I said, makes a conscious decision to be homeless because it's easier. And that's what you make the assumption because you're more comfortable with that, really, at the end of the day because you couldn't help. So you say, okay, well, that's where they want to be. So
yeah, but if you're not in a state where you can make those changes, you know, and your only choice is a choice that you're not going to be able to make, it's not really a choice, you know. But it's kind of like, I don't know if Pavlov, I know he did the saliva, you know, dog stuff, but I don't know if it was him, but there was some other experiment back in the early days of the 20th century when you could do this to animals, but they put dogs in like a little room with like an electrified floor, and initially they would try to get out of it, but then after a while they would just give up, and whenever the electrified floor would shock them, they would just lie there and weep. But you put another dog in the same room that the other dog's been in, that dog will, and you leave the door open, that dog will run out through the door, but the dog that has been in there, even though the door is open now, they will just sit there on the floor and take it.
Wow. Wow.
You know, and that's human nature as well, you know. You can't necessarily, you know, if you're beaten so far down that you can't even see light, you know, then how are you going to be hopeful and effective at doing anything, you know?
Those experiments.
Before.
I had actually done research on vivisection for a while, and those there were so many of those experiments done, and they were really horrific. But one of the things we're going for trained helplessness. It's where a lot of torture techniques, like in concentration camps and things like that, or where prisoners of war are taken, and what they do is they have to break someone down in order to be able to control them and manipulate them. So this was actually a trained or acquired helplessness, and once they could get someone in place, they were basically brainwashed.
Well, you could talk about trained helplessness not just from that perspective, but like from the general populace, with like TV and media, the education system. And that maybe that's kind of the goal.
Without success over and over and over again, you just give up at some point.
Yeah. But, you know, I wanted to comment about something that you'd said about making a difference, you know. And I've you know, struggled with depression before in my life. And in my early 20s, I was, you know, I kind of had this outlook that nothing really mattered. My life is pointless and useless. And it, like, if I didn't live in this apartment, somebody else would have it. If I didn't have the job I would have, somebody else would be doing it. What does it matter if I'm here or not, you know? But displaced that by a few years and, you know, having not even, you know, aimed at or thought that I would wind up in a lot of the places that I've been in regards to helping the homeless and being interviewed on TV over the right to feed the homeless and winning a lawsuit against the city of West Palm Beach over the right to feed the homeless when they made it an arrestable offense to give out food. You know, we won that battle, and there was a conversation that my brother and I were having afterwards, and it was a stark difference from where I come from, thinking that nothing really mattered and I couldn't make a difference, to you can make a difference. Any single person can make a difference if they just try, you know, and whether it's homelessness or whether it's something else, there is something in your community that you can do to plug in and help make things better, you know? And
was there any single event that brought about that change in you, or was it a series of events that kind of led you down that path? Because that is a remarkable change.
It was more of a gradual progression and like a broadening of perspective and being introduced to different concepts and different groups. When I lived up in Orlando is when I sort of ran across the Orlando Food Not Bombs people, and I met them, and that was when I, you know, I'd done some homeless stuff before, but that was the first time that I really started getting involved as far as like an adult. And then when I moved down here, there was somebody else that had actually put up a MySpace page wanting to start a Food Not Bombs group down here, and I got in touch with them, and, you know, a couple months later, we were giving out food to people downtown, you know.
Very impressive.
And just helping out with like the committees on the Homeless Advisory Board, and helping out with like the Project Homeless Connects that the Homeless Coalition does every few months. First off, just like bringing out food or cutting hair, even though I'm not an official hair cutter. I am for the Project Connects, apparently.
But they
invited me onto the board, and then, you know, I was chosen to be the representative for the Homeless Coalition on the Homeless Advisory Board. So I was actually a county official during that time, which, you know, is very bizarre, you know, coming from where I had. But, you know, you never know what kind of a difference you can make, but you do, everybody should know that they can make a difference, you know, and in regards to homelessness, it's general misconceptions that really guide a lot of people's opinions, and there's legitimate disagreements and things like that, you know, which is fine, but one of the programs that the Homeless Coalition has is the Faces of Homelessness, where somebody that is either homeless or formerly homeless goes to different groups, you know, and tells their story, and I tell you that it doesn't matter what the story is. Even if it is drug abuse and alcohol or whatever that led to them being homeless, hearing somebody actually tell their story, especially in the same room, breathing the same air as you, you realize that that's a person. That's not right. Just somebody that's homeless. That's a human being. And it's that jump, that distinction between, you know, just the broad concept of like, oh, that person's homeless or whatever, you know, that's a person. You know, who may be facing various issues, including not having a place to stay, but first and foremost, that's a human being. And in our society, at least in Palm Beach County, there are people that care more about the sea turtles washing up on the beach or the sharks washing up on the beach than they do homeless people that don't have a food to eat or a place to live, you know, and it's a tragedy.
Yes.
Boy,
yes,
that's so true, too. Jordan, that is so true. Somebody sent me something on Facebook, Jean-Lou, a friend of ours who lives in Paris, and he put a list together of what's important and what everybody talks about. And so many times it's about the Kardashians and it's about this man being paid $2 billion for his ball team, whatever it is, and all this stuff. And on the other side is all these horrible things that are going on every day, and they don't even make the front page. They don't even make the front page.
That's true.
So
that's true.
Yeah,
we're more concerned about Britney Spears and Michael Jackson, you know.
Yeah, it is true.
You look at what makes front page news and what doesn't in our society, and what, because people, you know, like the newspapers want to make sure they keep readership, so they know that homelessness is an uncomfortable subject, so they avoid it, even though it should be front page news every day until it gets fixed. You know, but there's such a stigma out there because it's misunderstood, and you know, when people don't understand something, they avoid it at all costs. So what you're doing, almost from an education campaign, is very important.
Yeah, well, the Homeless Coalition, its focus, its mission is to educate and advocate for the homeless, and to raise money for the 10-year plan to end homelessness. And that goes into the homeless resource centers, that goes into back-end housing, and money and funding. I know we got to wrap up in a couple of minutes. I have a couple of statistics here that I wanted to kind of share, and, you know, there's certainly things that you can do to help with the Homeless Coalition by volunteering or donations or things like that. But for the Lewis Center, the homeless resource center that opened up in September of 2012 now? Yes. for those first 12 months, there were over 1,200 families, homeless families, that came through the doors with well over 2,000 homeless children, 45% or 5 years old or under, that have entered the front door of the Lewis Center seeking help. And with the Lewis Center, we transition the families within 24 hours into some other environment, like, you know, whether it's a motel room or, you know, adopt-a-family housing or something like that. But in the as far as individuals go, there were well over 2,500 just during that 12-month period here in Palm Beach County, in West Palm Beach area, of homeless individuals that were assessed at the Lewis Center seeking help. And
how do you spell Lewis? Is it L-E-W-I-S?
Yes. And that's named after Senator Philip D. Lewis, who was a great proponent for homeless rights for decades, and he helped initiate the Homeless Advisory Board and the 10-year plan in homelessness. And he passed away a few months before the center actually opened, but we dedicated it in his honor. But going and just one more statistic as far as, like, homeless children are concerned, during the 2013 school year, last school year, there were well over 3,000 students in the Palm Beach County system that were identified as homeless.
Oh, wow.
So over 3,000 kids were identified as homeless. Those are just the ones identified during last school year, you know. So you can really sort of see the broad perspective of the need in the county. And the biggest need, like I said, is funding. And hopefully at some point we're going to try to implement a dedicated funding stream, which will be a tax, whether it's on like alcohol or tobacco or like hotel, you know, like an extra half percentage tax or something like that. But it would most likely have to come before voters to vote on. But that little bit of mm-hmm. extra tax can go to helping back in housing, helping get people affordable housing, and to start additional homeless resource centers throughout the county. And you talk about like West County, like in the Belgrade and Pahokee area. I don't know what unemployment is at now, but I know about 3 years ago it was at between 40 and 50% unemployment rate, you know, and that's here in Palm Beach County.
Yeah, Belgrade is tough. It's tough.
We are out of time.
The
poorest people. Yeah.
Yeah, I know
okay,
it.
Okay, well,
I appreciate
the time. You can
And we
want to
bring you
to,
back, Jordan.
If people want to help, they can go to homelesscoalitionpbc.org, and there you can get involved there. Homelesscoalitionpbc.org.
Excellent.
Okay, well, thank you so much, and thanks, everybody. Thanks, Shell. I would love to have Jordan back on the show again. He and I will make a date for another time. This is a very, very big subject, and I think that the more we talk about anything, the better it becomes. So thank you very much. Everybody go out and have a great, great day. God bless, and we'll be back tomorrow with a little recap, and I'm sure that this subject will be discussed again tomorrow on tomorrow's show. Thanks, everybody. God bless. Have a great day.
Thank you
you guys.
Have a good one.
Mm-hmm. Bye-bye.
Thanks, Jordan.
Take care. My pleasure. Thanks for having me.